application number 16427, Major T, Thomas Ward, Reel 5.
Major Ward, Reel 5. You were telling me what Colonel Keating advised you to do, that you should take your transport and make for Dunkirk.
Yes, now I said, also told me, now, when you get near Dunkirk, your transport will have to, you'll have to leave the transport and you'll have to destroy it. But about 2 miles outside Dunkirk, he says the military police will stop you and give you instructions. To take the vehicles off the road and destroy it where they say. And then you find out from the town major in Dunkirk what you have to do with your and yourself and your company.
Would I be right in supposing that if the brigadier and his the other members of the staff were missing for whatever reason, then in theory the senior battalion commander in the brigade should have taken over?
This in fact did happen, but I didn't know at the time. Colonel Steele of the 6th Greenhards was the senior of the three battalions, and he did actually take over this command, but I didn't know at the time.
Was Colonel Keating a regular soldier?
Yes, yes. I didn't know him very well because I hadn't. He wasn't there when I was with the battalion at the beginning.
He'd taken over from Lord Middleton.
Lord Middleton was upset and obviously not to be in command of the battalion when it went overseas, but it was decided that, well, for whatever reason, Colonel Keating would replace him. Well, I returned to brigade headquarters and we lost no time in packing up and getting out of the danger area because we were unable to defend ourselves. And no way could we deal with a tank if it came along. But we could see them in the distance, so you can tell how close we were.
Did you have adequate maps?
Yes, I knew where we were, and because, well, yes, obviously, I was a
intelligence officer.
I should know, yes, I'm fully equipped, and I kept a map best I could with the information I received.
Day to day,
or whenever I got any message with the German positions where they were. Mm. And I might say they were far too close. And it wasn't just in the nick of time we departed from near the River Scarpe.
What sort of
motoring to Dunkirk was not a picnic in any way, or it was extremely difficult because the roads were full of refugees, and I'm sure we've seen films of refugees fleeing from battle areas many times since the war, and that's what it was like. And periodically, the Germans came along and strafed the road, and everybody dived into the ditches. And then come out of the ditch and you would find a poor woman with a child in her arms lying on the road, and that was a you know, the beginning of the horrific scenes we were to experience during the next couple of 3 days on our way. It took us quite a long time to get to Dunkirk.
Did you have enough motor transport to get everyone?
We did, yes, but it was very crowded. We got everybody on, but we were about 30 strong. Now, that was much bigger than the brigade staff, headquarters.
Did this include personnel. Your stragglers from the Durhams and
yes,
the Cumberland?
Yes, yes. And we each day we got one or two more joining us. And one of these days, an officer came to me. I said, "May I join you?" And he was from the 7th Green Howards, Second Lieutenant Clay, David Clay. I was delighted to see him because that was an officer, I was the only one, you know, and he says, I've been cut off from the battalion. And I said, yes, how nice. And so he went along with us. And sure enough, near Dunkirk, about 2 miles out, we were stopped by the military police and we were told to destroy our vehicles and so on. Now, it was then my job to appoint three soldiers to accompany me and walk into Dunkirk. And I sorted out the NCOs and made them responsible for each vehicle to make sure that they were properly demobilised and, well, destroyed, and no use for the Germans when they came along. We were on half rations, so were the battalions at the time. So that was the situation. There's no supplies coming to us. So we had a bit of a meal before we left, and then went into Dunkirk. It's a journey I shall never forget. We were being bombed, we were being shelled, being strafed, and at one period, I remember very clearly, an officer passing us on the other side of the road lost his head through some shrapnel. I remember buildings falling on people who were passing on the other side of the road. We kept dodging in and out. When we heard an aircraft, we dashed, tried to get into the cellars of a building or whatever. We might have been buried, but better than being outside. And we finally arrived at the square, the main square in Dunkirk, and I was told by another military policeman that I would find the town major. As we were going into this building and had to go down into the cellar, a bomb landed very close and another one hit the next building. And I remember as we went down the steps, a stove passed us on the way through the blast which had just happened. I shall always remember that stove. It's a good job it didn't hit us. The town major was very helpful. There were four of us, and he obviously realised that we were very shaken, and so it didn't hurry us. They gave us some refreshment.
How long had you been on the road by that time?
3 days.
3 days travelling up to Dunkirk?
Yes.
And then, and have you any idea how long it took you to actually walk in?
The
last couple of miles?
Several hours, I think, really. I don't know. It was the longest 2 miles I'd done. Well, I was pleased I'd taken the 3 soldiers with me because it seemed obvious to me that we'd be extremely lucky if we all survived the journey back. And the idea was that we would take different routes but meet at certain points if we could remember where they were. The instruction was to go back and get my company, bring them through Dunkirk, through the centre, and to the beach. Well, the return journey to my lads was exciting, but not as exciting as it was going in. We had 2 very near misses, but survived, and actually it was when we were all together, one of them, and that would have been terrible if we hadn't been able to get back. We did get back. We were survivors. And we, 4 of us, decided we were going to get back home.
And were the people you'd left behind in the same place?
I told them to stay.
And they'd stayed there?
Oh, yes. I said, no, you mustn't move. We know where you are. I'm coming back as soon as I can. Well, we had a good reception, and they had a meal ready for us.
Had they managed to find shelter?
They were sheltering under trees, I'm afraid. But the military police had told us to put our vehicles under the trees, so we were camouflaged. That was important.
Hidden from the air.
Hidden from the air. Very important. And it didn't report very much excitement while we'd been away, but they were obviously anxious that we got back. Right, well, we waited. I waited until dark before. But in the meantime, I made 4 parties, NCO in charge of each. I said, it's no good marching down the street to the centre of Dunkirk. We're going to be in groups. Keep in touch with each other by watching where we go. Keep on different sides of the roads if you can. Dive into buildings if you have to. But wait for the next party to come along if you lose sight of it. We did this.
Was that something you had been taught to do, or was it something you were just making up?
I was. I think we'd had probably a lecture sometime on street-to-street fighting. And how important cover is, and so on. But because I'd waited until it was dark, it was quieter. The fighter bombers, the Stukas, had stopped diving.
So you were moving after dusk?
Moved after dusk. Yeah. Purposely, we waited. Made me wonder, really, sometimes, as we walked along, because there were so many buildings on fire. that it really wasn't really dusk in the street. But yes, all right, it was exciting, but it was better than before, and we arrived in the square and I went straight onto the beach, which wasn't far away. When we got on the beach, it was covered with troops, it seemed, but there were sand dunes, and obviously the best cover would be to dig ourselves in behind the sand dune. And this we did. We'd organised, before we arrived, how we were going to eat. With the small amount of rations we'd got, we divided them out. And also the water, actually, that's important. We got water bottles filled before we left and came through the town. We didn't know how long we were going to be on the beach. I got the lads settled and then went to... I looked around and there's no office to a visitor or anything like that. It was just beach, sea.
Was there anyone at the beach who showed you a certain...
No. No,
you chose your own patch.
Yes, we went on a patch where there were not many.
Had the other troops on the beach dug in?
Yes. Well, we learnt from them what we should do. I went off in search of. There must be somebody in charge. I thought, of the beach, there must be somebody organising. Looking out to sea, I could see some small craft coming in. I could also see some little specks, and there were heads of soldiers wading out towards the boats. I came across what I've called the jetty. I think it had a special name.
The mole.
The mole, that's right. And standing by the mole was a naval officer, and I spoke to him. He told me he was in charge. I told him where I had 30 men. He said, good show, dig yourself well in. Expect the Stukas to come and bomb you at first light. Don't move out of those trenches while the Stukas are about. He says, shelling, right, we can't do anything about that. It's just a question of whether your name's on it. I said, it's my job, if I survive, to call forward groups as the ships come in. He said, it isn't as easy as all that. If I stand here in the open, he says, I'll be dead in about 10 minutes. I've got to go into shelter somewhere, but and I've got to watch the ships. He said, there are some other naval officers helping me, but we've lost so many of them. He says, you might be here 1 day, you might be here 2 days, you might be here 3 days. Just depends how the ships come back. They've been, they've gone, they've come back, they've gone this last few days. So I went back and told them all this. Now I said, let's be sensible. Let's forget where we are. Keep undercover. Taffy, where are you? Play the tune. This was Taffy with his mouth organ. And then I knew somebody who was pretty good at arranging games. Just come on, let's have some competitions.
So you were on the beach, and you had your, what sort of competitions did you organise? Was it?
Well, I knew they were all interested in football. We had a bit of chaffing about teams. I'm afraid I was at a disadvantage. My team was Hull City, but I was up against Leeds United, Middlesbrough, Newcastle United, Sunderland. Everybody, you know, felt a bit of home. Thinking about it, team, and going to the match. And I really enjoyed, you know, teasing each other about the teams and so on. Another thing is that in the 5th Battalion, East Yorkshire Regiment, we had Wilf Mannion, very famous forward, played for England. And, of course, had one or two lads from that area, and they were very proud of him.
So were you playing fantasy football or things like that? Or
well, yes, but also we had mental competitions so to make them think and this and that. But I must say, it got very disrupted at times because the Germans are very severe on the beaches. Now, well, I was very worried about our rations. How long were we going to be there? It was impossible to plan, but it was comforting to see groups going towards
the mole.
And I knew that they were being called forward to go. So I knew that was still working. And then Stokes would come over and they would all dive somewhere. But of course, if you're crawling along the mole, there's nothing you can do about it. We had that experience. We were on the beach for 2 days, and I actually kept going to see the officer in charge and mentioning that we'd been on the beach for 2 days. Didn't want to lose our turn.
Did he have a proper list or of any
no,
sort?
No, just groups, you know. I told him exactly where we were. I said, I'll come back in an hour or what, if the situation's improving. Well, he said the ferry's due to come back from Dover, if it survives. It'll berth at the end of the mole. Now, get them ready. Get them ready. I'll call you next time if it comes. If it comes. So I went back with this good news. And we had something to eat. In fact, that was our last meal in France. It wasn't much. We had a drink from the water bottles. And we were called. I think it must have taken us an hour to get along the mole. It was a long mole, but it was an athletic feat. There were cross pieces of wood at regular distances, as you can imagine, on a wooden jetty. But every third seemed to be missing, and one or two more in other places. Now, if you didn't land on the secure boards, then the sea was down below. So, warned the lads, but I really lost command of them as we were going on the jetty. They had to really save themselves from then on. But we're all going to the same place, to the same boat.
Did they get mixed up with men from other units?
With other units, stragglers. In fact, I vaguely remember chaps joining us, coming into Dunkirk and then going away and so on.
But you managed to keep your corps of men together, didn't
Absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, yes. By this time I knew them all, even the stragglers who joined us. And we became very close because we were all in the same situation and we wanted to be on the same boat. Right, I arrived at the end of the mole and was told to jump, and I jumped onto the deck of the Queen of the Channel, the Dover Ferry, and then waited to see how many lads, my lads, came along. One by one they came in. It seemed to take ages. All with a smile on their face. One or two with a tear. We were all on board, but very close together. And we actually stayed more or less where we jumped, because the deck was so full we couldn't move.
Was there anyone on the ferry trying to get you organised?
Yes, there was one chap at the end of the ferry. He was very exposed, very exposed.
Was he a member of the crew of the ferry, or was he in there?
Yes, and there's a naval officer there as well. Very brave chaps. Did a magnificent job. Looking round, it was just dawn, and you could see along the coast and the sea, you could see masses of soldiers wading out to the small boats. In the distance, I could see a naval ship taking on some of these lads. And we were beginning to think how lucky we were. We could also see in the distance, seemed quite a long way, that jetty was a long jetty. Could see the lads still on the beach waiting their turn. And then the bombers came. We could see them bombing the beach. But we'd just left the jetty then, we'd sailed. And it must have been about an hour later we were selected as a target for one Stuka bomber. It screamed in and dropped its bomb on the stern of our ship. We fortunately were not on the stern. And it went away. The ship began to list. And I don't think we had any smiles on our faces. We realised it wasn't over yet. It was listing. it could be sinking. And then by a miracle, by the grace of God, we saw some movement by the ship. I was near the rail. It was a very small freighter coming alongside our side with barrels on the deck. I don't know if anybody told us or if we had anybody in charge to tell us or whether there was anybody organising it. I said to the lads, here's our opportunity. I wonder if we can jump. If you miss, you're in the water. If you're in the water, there isn't any hope at all here now. So be careful. Some of the other lads, some not in our head, had begun to jump. I only saw three of them go into the water. I said, come on, it's possible. We made it. God. We made it.
Was it a long jump down onto the deck of the freighter?
We were listing, and it was...